Good afternoon, and welcome to the September 10th, 2025 planning hearing. First, Commissioner Rice, if you can help us with the pledge of allegiance.
I wanted to do something.
But you know what? Strike that. Commissioner Coons, will you lead us to the pledge of allegiance?
All right.
Sorry.
Okay, ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Nailed it.
Thank you. For the record, we're going to have Commissioner Coons do the pledge of allegiance every time we meet now.
It's twice in a row.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The key is to say, ready, begin.
Uh-oh.
Just so you know.
That's right, okay. All right, let's do roll call real quick. Second District, Commissioner Seha.
Present.
Okay, and with Third District, Commissioner Rice.
I'm here.
And Fourth District, Commissioner Coos.
Here.
Fifth District, Commissioner Bartlett.
Here.
And First District, Commissioner Ha, we are here. All right, so we got the minutes for the May 28, 2025 that needs to be reviewed and approved. Has everybody gotten a chance to review, and do I get a motion?
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, with that, I'll let the executive officer introduce the only item we have for this hearing.
Thank you, Chairman Hall. Today's discussion item is a public hearing regarding Zoning Code Amendment 24-03, which is related to battery energy storage system facilities ordinance. The applicant is OC Development Services. The location is within all unincorporated areas of Orange County, inclusive of all supervisory districts. The item is to consider a recommendation for adoption by the Board of Supervisors of proposed Zoning Code Amendment to include development standards for battery energy storage systems, otherwise known as BESS, facilities located within unincorporated areas of the county. The intent behind the ordinance was to develop regulations to advance and protect public health, safety, and welfare by establishing regulations for the installation and the use of these facilities within the unincorporated areas. And we have Scarlett Dugan, who is our planning manager, or a current planning manager, who will present on staff, and Commissioner Coos.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll be abstaining or recusing. It's interchangeable, right?
Recusing, no, they're not.
Okay, recusing myself, as I have consistently on this item, the lead up to this hearing, due to the fact that one of my clients could be directly impacted by this ordinance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Today I'm here to request for Planning Commission recommendation for adoption by the Board of Supervisors of the proposed zoning code amendment text to include BESS facilities regulations. The current draft of the BESS facility ordinance is inclusive of your feedback from the last study session as well as the previous one. Oh, it's a little small. But luckily you have a handout version of this, but I wanted to talk about how did we arrive at today's request to the Planning Commission to ask for this recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. So let's review the actions that have transpired for this journey right here. So at the October 8th, 2024 Board of Supervisors meeting, the board directed staff to research and draft an ordinance setting forth development guidelines and standards for BESS facilities. Then in response to the board's direction and staff's request, the Planning Commission authorized initiation of the Zoning Code Amendment and a General Plan Amendment to develop guidelines and standards for BESS facilities at the Planning Commission's December 11, 2024 meeting. At the January 28, 2025 Board of Supervisors meeting, the board adopted an interim emergency ordinance placing a 45-day moratorium on establishment of any large-scale BESS facilities in all unincorporated areas of the county and direct staff to coordinate with OCFA to provide a report back to the board on recommended next steps. Following that, at their March 11, 2025 Board of Supervisors meeting, the board extended the interim urgency ordinance and moratorium by 10 months and 15 days to allow additional time for staff to consider, study, and assess the various approaches to the regulation of bus facilities. After that, at the March 26, 2025 Planning Commission meeting, we held our first study session to solicit feedback from the Planning Commission on developing a regulatory framework for bus facilities. And we held a second study session with the Planning Commission in consideration of your feedback from the first study session. We then drafted a proposed zoning code amendment text for you to take a look at and also provide additional feedback at that time. So that brings us to today. Today's request to the Planning Commission is for you to consider a recommendation to the Board Supervisors for adoption of this proposed zoning code amendment to include bus facilities requirements in our zoning code. As staff progress in drafting the proposed zoning code amendment text for bus facilities, the main considerations that have been on top of mind included feedback received from the teams we have consulted with. So those would be our key energy stakeholders, such as Southern California Edison, San Diego Gas and Electric, labor unions, trades groups, bus technology manufacturers and developers, and from the Planning Commission. Continued compliance with latest codes and regulations, such as Building Safety Code, California Fire Code, federal and state regulations pertaining to these types of energy facilities we consider. More main considerations include the public safety of residences and businesses, such as setbacks, potential hazards in very high fire hazard severity zones. And those are some additional items that we consider in addition to decommissioning protocols for these types of facilities. We then consider community impacts throughout our process that relates to aesthetic concerns, noise impacts, and future demands of the community. And finally, our last main consideration through this process was consistency with regulations that are pertaining to these facilities in our nearby communities, as well as to the any state guidance or other local guidance that have been given. So throughout the process, staff met with the following groups to gain feedback: our local fire authority, which is the Orange County Fire Authority. Just a note that OCFA will remain an integral reviewing agency for all future proposed bus facilities that will be coming through the County of Orange for permitting. As you can see in the proposed zoning code amendment, they are their review and approval of certain items are weaved into that process. We also have outreach to key energy stakeholders who I just mentioned, SCE and SDG&E. They were able to provide their input throughout this process. Private developers who I just mentioned, who are like the technology manufacturers, for example, and folks who would help energy stakeholders build these such facilities. We reach out to them as well for input. Labor unions and trades groups, these are the groups that are actually out there building, using their chance of building these facilities, so we wanted their input as well. And then finally, staff received and considered comments provided from the general public through them contacting us, because we do have a project website that we provide contact information, as well as through public forums like Planning Commission study sessions where they can comment on these. So from these outreach efforts, staff received a list of feedback and have highlighted the key ones considered in this presentation on this slide here. Details of how staff responded to the key feedback is provided in the staff report. I'm just going to go over the highlights of it. So some of the key feedback we considered was requiring environmental cleanup in the decommissioning requirements. Consider that developers of best facility will more likely site a facility where there is easy interconnection with existing energy grid infrastructure, such as existing substations. Consider limiting or prohibiting bus facilities in areas susceptible to wildfires or designated as very high fire hazard severity zone. Key feedback, additionally considered requiring installations to be performed by licensed and skilled workers for safety purposes. consideration of requiring a separation distance of BES facilities from residences and community facilities and property lines consistent with the latest adopted California Fire Code requirements. Consider requiring hazard mitigation analysis and other fire code strategies, as well as conditions of approvals to account for changes to the HMA during the building permit process. And then finally, considering regulatory consistency with other jurisdictions to provide a more predictable permitting process throughout the state. To expand on the last key feedback received considering regulatory consistency with other jurisdictions, let's review how our proposed BES facility ordinance compare with other jurisdictions. As staff progressed in drafting the proposed zoning code amendment, we reviewed available regulatory framework from nearby jurisdictions to understand existing BES facilities regulations in our neighboring communities. Currently, there is no county in the state that has adopted the BES facilities ordinance. In our neighboring communities, the counties of Los Angeles and San Diego are both currently working on developing land use guidelines pertaining to BES facilities, but they're still in progress. The county of Los Angeles is working on updating the renewable energy ordinance in their zoning code to include BES regulations. Currently, BES facilities in LA County are processed through planning as electric distribution substations and compliance with the electrical energy storage system requirements of their adopted fire code by the county. The county of San Diego is also working on developing land use and planning development standards for BES facilities. Currently, BES facilities in San Diego County are processed through planning as minor or major impact utilities and compliance with the county adopted California Fire Code and interim fire protection guidelines for BES facilities. Staff did find an adopted energy storage facilities ordinance in the nearby city of Menifee that has been effective since May 2023. The proposed BES facilities ordinance for the County of Orange shares some similarities and requirements with the City of Menifee adopted energy storage facilities ordinance, but the proposed County of Orange BES facilities ordinance includes additional requirements such as 100 feet separation distance from residential uses and community facilities, commissioning plan, financial assurance, decommissioning, emergency response and action plans, lighting, ability for applicants to request deviations from development standards. And this is just a highlight of the list of differences, but there is a table that we have included with the staff report that gives more details on this comparison. Additionally, staff reviewed the state of California's preliminary draft BES model ordinance guide. This is not available to the public, so we did not include a draft of that in the staff report, but we were able to take a look at a copy of this preliminary draft to understand recommendations from the state level on how they would recommend regulation of these types of facilities. Overall, the proposed BES facilities ordinance for the County of Orange is aligned with the preliminary guidance from the state. If Planning Commission recommends to the Board of Supervisors adoption of the proposed zoning code amendment to include the proposed BES facilities ordinance, then it is anticipated that the Planning Commission's recommendation will be presented to the Board of Supervisors at their November 4th meeting. If adopted by the Board of Supervisors at their November 4th meeting, then the BES facilities ordinance becomes effective December 4th. Typically, that would be 30 days after adoption by the Board of Supervisors, and which would bring that date to be prior to the expiration of the interim emergency ordinance and the moratorium, and that the expiration is in mid-January. So this ordinance will become effective if this timeline is followed prior to that. Today, staff is recommending that the Planning Commission receive the staff report and public testimony, adopt Planning Commission Resolution Number 25-05 to find that the proposed project is exempt from provisions of California Environmental Quality Act, common sense exemption pursuant to CEQA Guidelines Section 15061B3, and recommend to the Board of Supervisors adoption of the proposed zoning code amendment CA24-03 to add Section 79122, County of Orange Battery Energy Storage System Facilities, and amend Section 79134.6 to include Battery Energy Storage System Facilities definition. One thing I want to end the presentation with is to address the general plan amendment that was initiated and authorized by the Planning Commission back in December of last year. You did not see any information on here on that because we did not, after further review of the current general plan, everything that we're proposing right now is aligned with the general plan, and so we did not need to go further with that amendment. Thank you, Commissioners, for allowing me the time to present to you this proposed draft best facilities ordinance today and to request your recommendation for adoption by the Board of Supervisors. For members of the public who would like to stay informed of the county's best ordinance progress, all information can be found on the project page on the OCPW website. This concludes my presentation today. OCFA does have representatives here today in case you have questions for our fire authority.
Okay, thank you. Before I go to the commissioner for their comments, I guess I'll ask the question since I see representative from OCFA. Do you have anything to add or anything you want to share with us about these best facilities or anything before we I see you made the trip here, so I thought I'd give you the opportunity.
We're here to answer questions for you regarding them. If you have any questions regarding them, the California Fire Code, which has a battery section that covers best facilities, is adopted currently in effect for the county of Orange. We have experience with reviewing best facilities and what have you. I have two fire safety engineers that oversee the reviews for those. So if you have any questions for us regarding facilities or response operations, that kind of thing.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, any comments? We've been at it many times, so go ahead.
I have a question. So it's related to the fire designation. And with the recent fire zone updates, I've been following those very quickly or very closely, and I noted in the staff report, and thank you, it was an excellent staff report, that these facilities can't be located in a high fire zone, but they can be located in a very high fire zone, but they can be located in a high fire zone. And so can you articulate why we drew the line there rather than at the moderate, just all fire zones, or just try to clear that up for me?
Sure, we looked at high and very high as being the prevalent considerations. Moderate wasn't as much of a concern initially. And in talking with the large landowners within those areas in the high fire severity zones and their lack of interest in these facilities kind of drove that discussion as well.
So the ordinance is that it can be located in a high fire zone, but not in a very high fire
yes.
zone. So what's the demarcation? What's the factor that influences that?
We looked at what the fire code provisions currently address and discuss, and kind of try to figure out a way to be reasonably responsive to demand and need for these facilities, while at the same time not introducing them into the most sensitive areas that exist. I will note that there isn't a preclusion from allowing these facilities in high fire severity zones or very high fire severity zones within the fire code, because the fire code asserts that if these are designed in a specific manner, they are safe. Due to the abundance of caution and concern raised by the property owners in those areas, and also hearing feedback from residents, we elected to restrict it to those very high zones.
Okay, thank you. One other question, Mr. Chairman. On the findings of economic benefit, I'm referring to section 7-9-122.9. Just help everyone understand when you're looking for those findings of economic benefit, are you looking for an economic consulting firm to develop a report? Are you looking for just some basic math as it relates to what is coming in and what is going out? Just how would you characterize that?
Sure, we would look for a report produced by either an economist or someone who can assert benefit. We don't consider it to be limited to direct project benefit, but more or less direct or community economic benefit.
So direct and indirect.
Yes, and so what we would be considerate of, like an indirect effect would be, is that having storage in these locations, that would allow for a more economical transportation of energy, which meaning that we're not losing energy when we're transmitting the energy to these facilities and then back to the grid, and then the adjacent residential population that would benefit from that, that would be considered an economic benefit.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And if I may, I just have a couple of points I wanted to add to Scarlett's presentation. While this process seems to have been elongated, it was done very purposefully at the direction of the Board of Supervisors to incur as much public feedback as we can possibly engender, reaching out and kind of communicating with the various stakeholders. In addition to that, we also took the perspective of wanting to be regionally relevant and not creating a independent review process or an independent process that was so dissimilar that it would create some issues with a regional effect. And that also included going through the state's process and participating through GoBiz, their working groups to understand what the state is considering. And largely the reason why the state's ordinance is consistent with our ordinance is that when we provided it to the state took a lot of what we've already proposed and what's included in the city of Menifee and other considerations as part of that. So it was a very cognizant effort to be a part of that process to ensure that, you know, regionally we think of Southern California, but California as a whole is looking at these facilities and how best we could fit into that framework without creating unique characteristics to just the County of Orange. So I feel that through this process, we've developed a very appropriate ordinance that reflects public safety considerations, but it also strikes that Goldilocks principle that we don't want to create such onerous regulations that these facilities would opt into the state licensing facility, but at the same time, not creating such limited or veiled regulations that it would not produce tangible benefits to the community. And I think through the letters from NG and what we've heard is that this does create that kind of local process that would allow for consistency and approach throughout the region, and then also create added benefits through the decommissioning plans, the fiscal surety, and things of that nature to produce a use that doesn't create pre-construction impacts, post-construction impacts, and then operational impacts, and then decommissioning impacts. And so that portion of the ordinance actually came from some of the Surface Mining Act requirements for how you decommission surface mines, the fiscal surety, the plans for those sorts of things, so that it's not just blindly assuming this will be done appropriately, but as a consideration of approval, we have an understanding of what the decommissioning would look like, how much it perhaps would cost, and then having some financial surety that if an entity that was operating just left, we would have fiscal ability to then go in and clean up. And so this is consistent kind of with those state regulations related to surface mining. And it was trying to figure out ways of existing law and existing regulations that could be adapted to this type of use, considering, you know, there are no counties with these types of ordinances and very limited numbers of cities. It has become a very in vogue topic as addressed through the presentation where counties are considering this, but it was something where it's like, well, what has worked elsewhere that we can reasonably adapt into our ordinance that would provide a tangible benefit as well?
Okay. Commissioner, anybody else that have comments? Commissioner Rice?
A question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Kirk, I'm not sure you or whoever. I'm looking on the key feedback consideration, the seven boxes, and I'm looking at the required installations to be performed by licensed and skilled workers for safety purposes. Do we know where that would be defined and how it's defined? And are there licenses that actually don't really exist yet? What do we know about that?
So we initially considered incorporating references into the ordinance itself. However, we find it to be redundant to the existing building code requirements for permitting of these facilities. No different than a licensed contractor having to be perform construction activity like building a home. There are electrical licensing and other effective license requirements that through the code would be triggered at permit issuance. So it's not something that was ignored. It was just there's existing protocols for that that exist in the building code, and that would trigger these requirements to be identified through the permitting process itself. So it's a consideration downstream per se, but it's not lost in the process. So you're going to have your entitlement phase, which is going to have the legal processing, which would function through this ordinance. But then when you go through the permitting process, you're still going to have to follow all building and fire code provisions, which include requirements for certain licensed and skilled labor to perform this work.
And second clarification. Now, when the time comes that somebody shows up to the county and actually wants to build something like this, I think I brought up consideration last time. Because when we get these big facilities, nobody wants them to be an eyesore. I think what was my concern, but to make sure it's not an eyesore, you want to plant big trees or something like that, and then the big trees become a fire hazard or something. So if and when eventually somebody shows up, and I know that we've got the fire authority here, will the application, the plans, actually be reviewed by the fire authority?
Yes, we've built in provisions within the ordinance that would require review and assessment in the entitlement phase so as not to push that downstream and give the appearance that there's been approvals granted, legal approvals granted, without consideration by the fire authority as part of that entitlement process. So that would incur in the legal processing through the entitlement phase, and then again during the construction permitting phase. So they'll have a first assessment with a preliminary plan. As that plan gets further developed into construction documents, they'll also review those construction documents as well. And inclusive of that would be the landscaping plans and any other plans that would address potential fire considerations by adding fuels to that area.
Okay, so we're confident that people are going to understand that our first concern is probably for safety, fire safety. And our second concern is could be aesthetic.
Yes, and they're not mutually exclusive considerations. Right. And there are existing, I'd say, resources that can guide planting plans where they're selecting species that are not prone to having issues with high fire severity zones. No different than how we address fuel modification planting plans.
Nothing else right now, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Ha? I mean, Commissioner Seha?
Oh, no, I don't have any questions.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. Mr. Kirk, going back to the licensed contractor, I'm assuming in this case, it would be the Class A electrical contractor licensed by the licensing board, I would assume?
That's correct.
Okay, all right. And then just to confirm what you said about the OCFA's involvement with these facilities. So I'm assuming during the entitlement phase or the permitting stage that OCFA will get involved with the project review and provide comments, if any, right, before we would grant a permit for the construction of the facilities.
That's correct. So during the entitlement phase, it will be reviewed and assessed by OCFA for their considerations with recommendations on the facilities and design, incorporating into kind of the project review process, culminating in the entitlement being brought forward with OCFA finding that it meets their requirements. They typically don't approve projects, but they'll find that they meet the minimum requirements as identified in their regulatory documents. Subsequent to that, when the project progresses to the permitting phase, there's an additional review by OCFA where there's additional technical detail and plan design that they will also review that would be required to achieve their clearance prior to permit issuance. So they're going to get both the preliminary through the entitlement process of review of it so that they can provide some early considerations and concerns. If we need to involve additional conditions of approval on site-specific applications, that would be incorporated during the entitlement phase. And then subsequent, when they go into the permitting process, they would still have to address all the permitting requirements and fulfilling all the regulatory requirements as identified through OCFA through that permitting process.
Okay. And then another question I have, so these facilities are so new, right? do we have any feedback? And maybe I misheard, but the facility in Manafi, is it in operation or is still being considered for approval? And do we have any feedback? Like how has it been, if it's in operation, how has it been going so far?
I don't know directly with Menifee. We've had conversations about facilities in general, how they've been permitted and regulated through the fire code and in addressing that. That's also why we didn't include a lot of language on specific technology, limiting it to more incorporation by reference as the emergent technology does change. The ordinance doesn't automatically become basically invalid or no longer effective because of those changes. And so what we've heard through the process is that when these facilities are designed to meet minimum fire code requirements and, you know, addressing adaptations in technology, these have proven to be safe facilities. It's just ensuring that they meet the minimum requirements. In addition to that being that this is a planning document, we looked at added restrictions and added requirements that would create a better environment based upon the feedback we've already received from residents and the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, and last item for me is the decommissioning. I think you mentioned that, again, these facilities are so new, so all we can use is operation from mining, facility, whatever, and use that as kind of a guideline to come up with our SOCAR requirement, regulation, and decommissioning, right? That, which is a big thing for me. These facilities are so new, we don't know what's gonna be left behind when it's time to decommission. Mm-hmm. So I believe the last year we talked about maybe the developer would have some kind of bond or some kind of allowance for decommissioning process. The last thing you want to do is these guys pack up their bags and go, and we only have $10 left, right? So I think we addressed that during the last hearing, but I just want to confirm that is the case.
That is correct. And without knowing what will need to be decommissioned, what we kind of refer to generally is that the site would be restored back to a condition that predated construction of the facility. So soil contaminants, if existing, would be required to be remediated. Any equipment would have to be appropriately decommissioned and removed from the site in a safe process. And a lot of that would be conducted through a demolition permit itself. But prior to even getting to that phase, we want to have some understanding of what would that look like. How would they go through that process? Not necessarily answering as using an analogy, a mathematical problem, but at least identifying what that mathematical problem needs to look like with specific caveats with, X is going to be something in the future. How will you address X? How will you address Y, not knowing what is in the future, but just asserting this is how we're going to evaluate through an environmental site assessment, potentially what are the requirements in place at time? What is the equipment in place at time, and really create a framework and roadmap that when we do get a demolition plan, we have an understanding of what is the expectation as part of the entitlement process to then be carried through the demolition permit itself.
Okay.
I'm going to add to that really quick to what Justin just mentioned. In our ordinance, in consideration of the feedback about having financial assurance in place, we did put a condition in there that, to Justin's point, without knowing what they're going to build, because sometimes with the entitlement process, they have to adjust their what they actually permit on the permitting side. So prior to issuance of a building permit, we do require that they provide a bond or some kind of surety on that would match what they have provided the decommission.
Okay, that's good to know. Right. Anybody else before I open public comment session?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one brief question. If you could invite up the representative from the fire authority.
Okay.
I can ask a question.
Gentlemen, OCFA, please.
Good afternoon, commissioners.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
As this is all brand new. You're looking at it. In your role, as you see it might be, can you say that these facilities are going to be identical to, say, electric substation, or have you identified, or do we know of special considerations? Do we know those things yet that? Because I don't know much about this thing, but I've seen lots of substations around, and I would think that that would be something close, but do we know that there's yet that there are special considerations beyond something that we see like at a substation?
Yeah, we do have a few facilities already here in the county. They're typically going to be located either in or near existing infrastructure, the power lines and whatnot. And with regards to layout and construction, there are a lot of similarities between the facilities. What you may see in variance is just called product, right? So different companies producing different modular units, but those variations are very minor. Most are incorporating very similar or the same safety features and other functions with the boxes that hold these batteries. So there's a lot of consistency that we're seeing now, but you're correct, it is a very new technology that we've had to adapt to.
I guess, so the experts know, because I analogize to a substation, the transformers, and that kind of stuff, and I imagine that's mostly like copper and things like that, but batteries we know include interesting chemicals. So do you feel like we have a good handle on that issue, the technical makeup of batteries and our safety concerns there in regards to fire?
Yeah, we've been tracking the battery development since its inception. There is going to continue to be some evolution with batteries, but we continue to track that. And as far as the metals, they've seemed to remain fairly consistent that we see in the construction of the batteries and these battery energy storage systems.
So. I think we touched on this last time, Mr. Chairman. Do we foresee these facilities, I guess I'm imagining something a little larger, are they going to have their own fire suppression systems? Is that what they do? We've got a disaster, call the fire department, call 911, right? I don't know.
So there are, as mentioned, as the technology's kind of adapted over time, you do see variances with some of these modular systems. Some of the earlier systems did have extinguishing systems integrated into it, whether that was water suppression or some sort of gas like a CO2 or something of that nature to extinguish fires. But technically, or what we've seen is the best result is to allow them to run through their thermal runaway process, consume the batteries. So some of the newer ones, you don't see those same elements, but you'll see things such as deflagration panels to allow the release of any pressure that builds inside the box to add safety elements for first responders and then the surrounding community and infrastructure.
Okay, so you're watching that technology as it emerges, and I think the last time we asked in regards to that, if you had a fire at a facility and I don't know, it's appropriate, I guess, do you apply water or do you apply foam? And then I think we had the question, because the question being, if you're applying a bunch of water and it's going over these interesting chemicals, where's that water going to go? And Mr. Kirk, do we know about that? I think we talked about drainage and things like that, and I'm not sure that that's the fire authority's problem or not. Where does our, if it's indeed water, where does our contaminated water go?
With any project, there would be a requirement to have water quality management plans associated with runoff and collection of any potential contaminants, so that would be addressed through that, somewhat of that process. But I think it would also be dependent upon the manner in which the fire response is deployed. But any toxic material that would enter into the watershed would have to be appropriately addressed through that water quality management plan process.
Okay, and just for curiosity's sake, if you know, officer, is it currently, because I don't know anything about fighting fires really, is it application of water currently? Is that what we think is done? Or is there, are we needing, is the fire authority gonna need special equipment or chemicals, foam, things like that?
Yeah, so specific to the battery energy storage systems, I've written policies and worked across the state to also develop other policies for other agencies. We are not applying water directly to these systems. We are just ensuring that the systems or the unit involved doesn't impact adjacent units. So you may see water flow touching the adjacent containers to keep them cool, to prevent any spread to those containers. But we're going to allow this system to burn itself away. it's gonna mitigate all those hazards you mentioned as far as runoff and other concerns better than trying to put water on it.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, if no one else, then we'll open the public hearing. I see a lot of people back there, so.
We didn't invite people to, at the beginning of the meeting, there are comment cards that you can fill out and turn in to Justin.
So if any member of the public is wishing to address the commission after their comments, if they could please fill out a comment card, that would be appreciated, and just turn it in to me.
Take them a minute here and see how many public comments we have. So.
And we would still need to open the public hearing to receive the vote.
I did.
Sorry. Yes, Mr. Stephen Maligan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Ha, Commissioners. My name is Stephen Halligan. I'm the Regulatory and Legislative Manager with the Orange County Power Authority. We're a community choice aggregator providing electricity service to over 175,000 customers in Orange County. We're committed to bringing affordable, reliable, and clean energy to Orange County. Battery energy storage systems are vital for California to meet our climate goals, to address affordability, and to ensure a reliable and stable grid. I want to thank the commission and staff for their time working on this ordinance. We want to ensure local generation and energy storage systems are available and buildable for all of the businesses. Safety is our greatest importance, and we've worked with the state legislature and California Public Utilities Commission to ensure that these systems are safe. The state has already taken several steps to ensure the safety of these systems. We believe it's important that the county does not overly restrict the ability of businesses to construct these systems, and we encourage you to wait for the state to release their ordinance. And we also understand that this ordinance will only apply to the county unincorporated areas, but we are concerned with other cities and counties may look to this ordinance as a model to replicate. And as we saw, you know, not many cities or counties have done this, so we think there is time to wait and see how the state reacts to these systems. I'll also note, as mentioned, these battery systems, the technology is changing very quickly and rapidly, and they are getting safer as, you know, every day. And so we don't want to rush anything, and we don't want to limit the ability of anyone to be able to build these systems in order to reach those climate goals, create affordability, and have a safe and reliable grid. I'll just finish by saying that we're ready to assist the county in any way we can. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I have no further requests to speak at this time.
Okay, if there are none of you else, then we'll close the public comment session. With that in mind, I guess it's time for us to see if we have
a couple of comments. I got a couple of comments first.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that after reviewing the materials, that the decommissioning plan was really a key part of this, in my opinion, and having the surety required so that should the applicant change hands or whatever, there's a mechanism in place. That was really a key thing for the commission. Also, the 100-foot buffer and the ability to modify that if justified is showing the flexibility, but also putting a fairly rigorous standard in place. But if you want to do something less than that, you really have to come up with some justifiable reasons. I also thought the research and that went into the comparison table was really good, and it substantiates the regulations that the staff is putting forth in the ordinance. That was great. The outreach, we talked a little bit about that. That's really beyond reproach. So the utility companies, they were consulted. Other cities and counties were consulted in their relevant legislation. The state legislation, existing and pending, was also evaluated. And so, and along with the best technology groups and the labor unions and the trade groups and ANGI. So you guys did a really nice job of reaching out and really making this a comprehensive approach. I have a little experience in this. In Menifee, that there's a proposal by a sister company of Brookfield that's proposing a battery storage system right across from the grid, from the power station, and it, knowing very little about this, just being able to help balance the supply and demand during peak periods, and creating that outlet, if you will, so that the grid can stay stabilized, is really important. And so I just want to say thank you to the staff for putting together a great report, really taking your time to do the research, and being very comprehensive about it. And I'll be supporting the item.
Okay, Commissioner Rice, do you want to add?
Well, I wanted to echo Commissioner Bartlett is always very comprehensive, and I always rely on him to look at all the details. And so I thank you for that. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, because I know you focus really on this decommissioning thing, because right now we're all concerned about, you know, building, and it's new and we need it, and energy and AI and all these things echoing and shouting at us, and so let's do it, and yes, let's do it. But you know, I've unfortunately been around long enough to where things come and they go, and so I think it's very smart that, Mr. Chairman, that you focused and assisted staff perhaps to focus on decommissioning, because my question, of course, was, and I heard, I believe the answer was going to be a sufficient bonding, because our concern isn't that some giant corporation comes in here, builds something, and they decide to go somewhere else, and fine and dandy, they're a giant corporation, and we'll deal with them. It's you know, a company that comes in, and it's the Orange County Best LLC, and they operate, maybe they operate successfully for 25 years. And then, for some reason, known only to their board, they shut their doors, and they're gone. And so we can't rely on just a great decommissioning plan, and we heard all about that from Mr. Kirk, but we have to make sure that I think the term that we call them, the judgment proof individuals, that we're not going to be, the taxpayers are not going to be left holding the bag in every sense. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that, and Mr. Bartlett for that, making my job easy. And I'll be supporting this as well. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the kind comment. And as you guys all know, go ahead.
Actually, I see a question.
Go ahead.
So quick question. Do we know when the state is expected to finish these local guide to help local jurisdictions?
No, their anticipation would be years, some additional time. We have been privy to their draft document, but that has not been produced to the public yet for public comment, and then going through their whole process in and of itself.
And just to reaffirm what you said earlier, is that the state has taken some of the text from the ordinance here for their local guide, like in constructing that language and those materials, right?
That is correct, and we provided that in the matrix of comparison where there are the similarities and potential differences. But really, it's taking a common sense approach across the board, seeing what is used existing with like the city of Menifee, how the counties of LA and San Diego are regulating these facilities independent of a specific ordinance, and then seeing how other communities within the state, and then participating in the state's process to understand kind of what their considerations are, hearing not only from OCFA, but also Cal Fire, their considerations and things like that, really produces a document that, you know, while they did take from ours, it's more or less, you coalesce around the same common sense points. Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I'm just gonna follow up with some comments. And I wanna thank staff and my colleagues here for their dedication in creating this ordinance. And I too will support these efforts, but I just wanted to get those questions answered first. Thanks.
Okay, if I don't have anybody else, then I'll take a motion from somebody. Guy here, from all three of you guys, that you all are in support. So do I have a motion from somebody? Commissioner Hartley?
I'll make a motion to approve the recommended action.
I'll second.
County Council, is that okay? Do I have to name the actual item?
Nope, you do not.
Okay.
As what the board does, and I've been trying to really encourage you guys to do that.
It used to be that we have to spell it all out.
I feel like it's a win that Commissioner Bartlett said approved recommended actions.
I listen to you.
I know, you do.
Okay, if that's the case, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so it is approved. With that in mind, I guess that we only have one item, so we'll go to executive officer update. Mr. Kirk?
Thank you, Chairman Hahn. Thank you for your consideration of this item. Moving forward into the fall, we are anticipating at least two meetings, either in October, one in October, one in November. As our protocol, we will convey that in advance to ensure we have a quorum and we can address these items. But nothing really exciting happening planning-wise. Things are just moving forward as we process applications.
Okay, and I'll make sure I'll stay here. I'm not taking any more vacation for the rest of the year, I don't think. Okay, with that, then we'll go to County Council for updates.
I don't have anything.
Wow, this is gonna be real quick. Planning Commission, comments?
I just have a question for Justin, really. Based upon the 10,400 RENA number that we were issued by this, or I guess we came to an agreement with the state on what we needed to do. What kind of progress?
That's an overstatement.
Pardon me?
An agreement with the state is an overstatement.
Yeah, overstatement, all right. What kind of progress is being made there? Just if you could highlight that for us, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. What we've done recently and worked with our consulting firm is create a punch list of items based upon the dates and times identified within our programs within the housing element. Thus far, we have worked on our inclusionary housing element to address and identify potential programs. We've presented that to the board for consideration from a policy direction. We were required to do that by December of 2026, so that is the first milestone that we've completed. The next effort that we will be going through is review of our ordinances related to group homes and sober living facilities. As you may recall, originally our housing element included very specific language about how we would basically repeal some of those provisions. Due to a court case, that changed to just review and assess. So that is the next effort to go through that process, and then we will begin in the next calendar year working through the remaining programs identified for that year period.
And if you're looking for progress towards the 10,000 units, we did a general plan progress report that went to the board in April, and that also goes to the Department of Housing and Community Development. So if you search the agendas online, and I don't remember the exact board date.
It was, I think, the first meeting in April.
Okay, so if you look at that agenda, you can find our general plan progress report about how many in each category we had. There's also a...
Maybe at the, like this is September, so maybe at the October meeting, you guys could give us an update on that?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
I just can't repeat exactly the categories and how many we had.
No.
That's okay.
I don't remember.
Yeah. And I just want to note, we do not have a program in place that compels us to have those units constructed. That is a private consideration. And so we do track that. Our bigger focus is on the programs included to eliminate and remove barriers to housing development itself.
And every year we do have to do that general plan progress report showing the units, but it doesn't have an impact. There's no enforcement mechanism.
There's no mandate, there's no enforcement.
There's no enforcement mechanism right now.
Right.
It's more of a reporting tool to the state that are kind of producing some information to them so that they can aggregate that information across the state itself.
But it's been a while, I think you said April, right? But wasn't there a clarification that the state wanted from us that we were supposed to get back with them? Or maybe I'm wrong on that.
No, we have an approved housing element. So it went to the board in February, and we have an approved housing element in substantial compliance. The state gave us the letter. What you may be referring to is is the group home sober living home issue. That was kind of the last thing we
it's
were fighting
while.
About.
It's been a while. I'm still jet lagged. So.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. So, but that was resolved, and so we're moving forward on our programs.
I think the effective point or significant point is that we are in substantial compliance with the state and that we are diligently complying with requirements to address the program so that we retain our compliance and not become
not
out of compliance.
Any penalties from the state?
No. Okay. And the only penalty I guess we incurred was the inability for us to receive certain housing funds as not having a compliant housing element. That has now been eliminated with the housing element being found in the compliance.
Okay.
Thank you.
I guess public comments. Does anybody out there have any comments for the commission or want to share anything with us? If that's it, then the hearing is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.